Hi, I'm James Connor, and welcome to Inspired by Their Stories, the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation's monthly podcast.
Hello, and thanks for joining me for our sixth episode of Inspired by Their Stories. Before I introduce our guests, I want to give a shout out to the team at one of the foundation's humanitarian hotels, the St. John's Resort in Plymouth, Michigan. By now, I hope you're aware that the St. John's Resort hosted the 2025 LIV Golf Team Championship. But today, I want to recognize the recent accolades they received from the U.S. News and World Report. According to the latest rankings, the St. John's Resort is among the top resorts in the state of Michigan. It was named the number one hotel, the number one resort, and the best business hotel in the state. And on top of that, when you stay there or at any of our humanitarian hotels, 100% of the net profits go to support charitable causes in the local community and around the globe. Speaking of traveling, one of the best parts of my job is getting to visit and talk with our partners and to see them in action. Last month, I was able to visit Atlanta, Georgia, and South Bend, Indiana. I met with several organizations that are doing incredible things like combating hunger, helping foster youth, and strengthening their local communities. Through these partnerships, we are working towards a future where no one is left behind due to poverty, disability, or circumstance. Our guest today is somebody who is a valued partner in bringing that vision to reality. In this episode, we're talking with Olivia Malerwa from Mission One. Mission One partners with the global church to make communities in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East more like the kingdom of God. To help inspire us and tell us how they do it, I've invited Mission One's president, Olivia, to join us today. Olivia, thanks so much for being here. Welcome to Inspired by Their Stories.
Thank you, James. I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, I want to start by having you just introduce yourself to our listeners.
I'm Olivia Malerwa, and excellent job pronouncing my last name, by the way. Well done. I'm originally from Uganda in East Africa. And so I consider Uganda, Kampala home. I also consider Phoenix, Arizona home. And so I guess my true home is in the skies, in between those two places. I've moved to the U.S. about 8 years ago with my husband. We have two boys who keep us very occupied when I'm not busy with all things Mission One. And so I originally trained to be a human rights attorney and worked a little bit in international business. And all of that comes together for me in the work that we do at Mission One. And so I feel really, really privileged to be doing this right now.
Now, did you move to the U.S. to take a position with Mission One, or how did that move come about?
No, not at all. I moved for my husband, and I'm sure ladies will relate to this. I met a boy, you know, I was set on my career. I was going to be the future Under Secretary General of the United Nations or something like that. And then I met a boy who completely derailed my life. But I think all the best things in life start out that way. So I met Josh when he was home for the summer one time, and we were introduced by my sister, who said, "Here, meet." And then, you know, the rest is history. And it was love at first sight. I packed up my bags and moved to Phoenix, Arizona with no plan whatsoever of what I was going to do. And so when I got here, I sort of started exploring, you know, what my life would look like and how I could reimagine what my career could be outside of, you know, what I thought I was going to do. I thought I was going to be a human rights attorney for all of my career. I had decided that when I was 9. And so you can imagine that it was a big shift to think, okay, who am I? And so that took me on this journey of really going back to the core. What are my values? What do I care about? The thing that drew me to law in the first place was really this sense of, I want to be a voice for the voiceless. I want to use my position, my influence, my relative privilege to lift others up. And so I started to look for opportunities to do that where I was at. And through that, God led me to Mission One. I was invited to join the team by a dear, dear friend who was president at the time. And so I joined initially as programs director and then eventually became president about 3 years ago.
Wow. What a journey. So why don't we start talking about Mission One? What does Mission One do? How would you describe the work?
So Mission One exists to partner with locally led ministries, churches, small community-based organizations to make their communities look more like the kingdom of God. And that is intentionally broad and kind of vague, because if you ask any one person, hey, what does the kingdom of God look like to you, you'll get different answers. And that's intentional because we know that community flourishing, you know, a good life looks different in different contexts. So we want to be able to respond to that wherever the need is in a way that is specific and intentional and not sort of cookie cutter where we go. So Mission One, you know, started about 34 years ago with that simple goal. And we've since grown to a network of about 640 missionary families that we support in countries as different as Nepal or South Sudan, all of Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. And we get to walk alongside these small community-based organizations as they come up with a vision and for how they want to change their communities and ideas for how we can support them to do that. So simply put, I think that's who we are. That's what we do.
How do you find the different missionaries, the different community organizations? How do they get on your radar?
Great question. So the heart of everything we do is relationship. We think that our secret sauce is that we build deep level relationships of trust. If you've been in the nonprofit development space for a while, you know that a lot of times relationships are very project-based, right? So you come together for a specific purpose to accomplish something and then it's done. We don't do that. Of course, we have project frameworks for the sake of measuring impact, but the relationships that we form are for life because we believe that the work of community transformation is lifelong work. We're not going to solve poverty, you know, in a month or 4 years. Right. We're just going to keep hacking at it, right, over time. And so because we're invested in those deep relationships, the way that our partnerships come about is also through relationship. So I know James, for example. I trust James. I've come to understand him and his values over the last 3 years that we've known each other. And so if James came to me and said, hey, Olivia, I was just in Nepal. I met this awesome community-based organization. They have a young church that they've planted. They have this great vision for what they want to do to serve their communities. I would say to James, hey, introduce me to them. I'd love to know them. And then we would go on that journey of building relationship, understanding who they are. They get to know us. And eventually, through a very lengthy two-year process, we sign a partnership agreement and we begin to work together. And that's how all of our relationships are formed. So right now we have about 13 individual organizations that we work with, and there is a unique story connection with each and every one of them. And that's what is so beautiful about it.
Yeah, I love that you were talking about the importance of relationship, because I think that's so key to building trust, to making real change. You also mentioned the term community transformation, and I know I've heard that not just from Mission One, but from other organizations. So how does Mission One define community transformation?
I think what's beautiful about Mission One is that we don't define it, right? We listen to the local leaders for what their definition is. And so you will find if you, you know, look at our projects, they take very many different forms because the needs are different. A community in rural Nepal, while poor, like a community in rural South Sudan, has different needs, right? Maybe in one community the need is clean water, in another community the need is a school. So for us, as long as it's something, one, that comes up from the community, hey, this is a need that we have, as long as it's pointing people back to the gospel, right? We want to be the hands and feet of Jesus. We want to be the salt and light in the world. We want to help the poor, you know, love justly, act mercy. So if it's pointing back to that, we want to explore it. And then we go on that journey of discovery with the leaders of the community, what that could look like and what our role in that could be and what their role in that could be as well.
And I'm sure all that's laid out in that partnership agreement that you work out together.
Yes.
And so when you're forming that document, you talked about this two-year process. I'd love to know, you know, when you're doing the work, what does that push and pull? What does that partnership look like as the work is starting to take shape?
Yeah. So we are working in a multicultural environment. So it is very interesting, but one might also say challenging. So we intentionally take our time on the front end to build trust. We talk a lot about building trust at Mission One. How do you build trust with people across cultures so that when things get complicated or complex, as they will, you have that reservoir of trust that allows you to think the best of each other, that allows you to be able to navigate changes together. So the beginning of everything is that partnership agreement. And it's not a complex legal document because that's not what we're about. It's more the intention. It says things like we are both committed to organizational competence, which means we're going to have structures in place that hold us accountable as Mission One, but our local teams are going to do that as well. We talk about cultural intelligence, which means we're both committing to learning about each other's cultures and forgiving where that's needed. We talk about godly character. We're a faith-based organization, so everything we do has to be rooted in the Bible. What is the biblical view for what a good leader is? We are held accountable to that, and our local teams are held accountable to that as well. And so that's what helps us kind of navigate and journey together as we take on projects. And then when we do a specific project, it begins with something we call a white paper, which is our project proposal, right? So we sit down together and we say, hey, we want to do a project, for example, to build the first high school for girls in rural Kenya. Love that. Okay. Why do we need that, right? Why is it needed? What will it cost? What will success look like in this? And so we define all of that ahead of time so that we can hold each other mutually accountable to those goals that we've set together as the project goes on.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a lot of projects that you undertake, but you are working in such a multicultural context. I'm sure that your experiences have taught you many things through these partnerships. Can you share any lessons that you've learned that were surprising to you?
Absolutely. I just came back from a trip around the world, right? This summer, I had the opportunity to travel to India, Nepal, Kenya, Uganda, Indonesia, visiting partners and projects, right? And so that stays with you. And I think one of the things that is surprising is how similar we are. Of course, I've talked about our cultural differences, and you know those are glaring and obvious from the outset. But then when you sit with people, you realize at the end of the day, you know, if I'm a mom, if I'm a dad, I'm the same, right? I'm a mom. I care about my children and I want the best for them and I want a better world for them. And that's true of any mom, whether they're in Phoenix, Arizona, whether they're in Indonesia or South Sudan. And so I find these common human points of connection everywhere I go. And it's just so beautiful to witness that and to be reminded of sort of our shared human experience, regardless of our outside physical circumstances or outside environment. At the end of the day, we all just want to leave the world a little better than we found it. We all just want to build a life for our children that's better than the one we had, right? We all just want to contribute to meaningful work, to use our gifts and talents and abilities to contribute to meaningful work. So that's something that's been wonderfully surprising to discover over and over again.
Yeah, I think we're so quick to look at how we're different, and oftentimes we are much more alike than we might realize.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Once we strip away the obvious things that distinguish us from each other, we find that there's just so much we have in common.
Yeah. My other question for you is when you're working in these various contexts, when you're working in these places across the globe, I'm sure there are different challenges in each community. One thing that I often think about is collecting data, right? When you're talking about what does success look like? So being able to collect the data you need to make sure that the project is successful. Can you talk about maybe some of the challenges that you've experienced and how those are addressed through the work you're doing with Mission One?
Absolutely. I let me speak specifically about just data and impact metrics, right? Because we love to measure what we're doing. We want to know that we're being effective. For us, everything comes back to what I said in the beginning, which is relationships. So one of the things that we do intentionally is we are in contact with our local teams weekly. So we're getting weekly updates, not just, you know, 3 months down or 4 months down. So because we want to keep our finger to the pulse of what's really going on. And then we travel as often as we can, at least once a year, sometimes twice, different members of the team going to visit projects to see firsthand what's happening, to hear from the people on the ground what the stories of impact are. And that helps us know the impact that we are making over time. And I think because we are in this relationship for a long time, we're able to measure those long-term achievements, right? So for example, one of the projects that is so near and dear to my heart is the school in Pokot that I keep talking about, right? You remember, James, 4 years ago, we started this project.
Right.
And we started, you know, we built the initial infrastructure, 17 girls. 4 years later, I got to go back this summer and the growth is obvious. You know, those 17 girls graduated high school. They all did well. They're all going to college. The school has grown from 17 to 159 students. It's going to be 200 in January. And so it's very easy to see just from that, the impact that it's had in the community. And mind you, all of the students in this school pay their own tuition. Their parents, their community is that invested. So to take this community from being one where they marry off girls young, they see them as a source of income for the family, to we're having to turn people away because so many want to go to this school, to me, that's such a great story of impact. It's not just the girls that are going to school. It's the mindset shift that's happening in the community as well.
Yeah, I think I'm very familiar with that project, mainly because I read the stories that you all publish about it, but also you always have these amazing photos. And I think about what a great job Mission One does about communicating back to the public, to their supporters, about the impact that's happening. Can you talk a little bit about the storytelling that goes hand in hand with communicating this impact back?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you say that, James, because if anything, we feel like we don't even do it justice. You know, when you are there in person, there's so much that you are experiencing, feeling, hearing, learning, that we just feel this great sense of responsibility to bring as much back to the community that's partnering with us in this. And so we're very, very intentional about that. We always have our camera out. We're always taking pictures. We're always taking videos. But what's been really helpful as well for us on the back end, on the state side, is to build systems of communication. So if you are in our communication network, you know that you'll definitely hear from us at least once a month or twice a month about different projects. We want to make sure that we have so much going on, but we want to make sure that we have continuous information that we're sharing about all the different things. We are very, very active on social media. We're always sharing stories. We're always, you know, doing that. We do about 2 annual reports a year where we share out what's happening. And then whenever we can, we love to meet in person with our donors so we can say firsthand what's happening on the ground. And that's just some of the ways that we try to keep everybody informed of what's going on.
No, and I think you do a wonderful job at it. So, you know, kudos to the team for what you do and how you communicate it.
Thank you.
Now, you talked about your opportunity to travel the world. Would you be able to share a few stories with us about maybe some of your recent travels? I know you mentioned going back to the school. I know you were also in Nepal and in other places.
Yes, I would love to. I have so many stories, fun ones, scary ones, encouraging ones. So let's see. So this summer I traveled, you know, all over, as I said, visiting with different partners and projects and teams. And I remember driving, you know, into rural Kenya. So you take 3 planes and then a long road trip. And then 2 hours of that is on a super bumpy road. But then eventually you get to this really remote village, which I hope you will visit one day, where the school for girls is. And I don't consider myself a very emotional person. So I was very surprised when I was like, just as the van was pulling up, before we even got there, I got goosebumps. Because the girls were lining up to receive us. I had goosebumps and I just started wailing. I I was, before we even got there, before I even spoke to them, I was just so moved, James, because when I look at those girls, I see myself, you know, but for the grace of God, I could have been any one of them. And so it's just so moving to me to be able to do this, to be able to serve them, to, you know, contribute in some way. And that's just, you know, one example. Another example, I traveled to Andhra Pradesh, India, for the first time this year, and got to meet some new ministry partners there. And so I'm pretty sure that I'm the first person that looked like me that some of the people had seen. And so we were chatting, and then people were whispering, and then somebody got up the courage and they said, "Hey, Olivia, do you mind if we touch your hair?" And I thought, oh my goodness. And so there I was kind of sitting down, and all the ladies and the little girls and the kids were touching my hair and asking me questions about my hair. It was just so beautiful. And I thought, of course you're curious. Like, you've never seen anybody that looks like me. And I had such a fun time. I had such a fun time visiting. And of course, there's always the food. Thankfully, I am a foodie.
Yes.
I am a foodie. I am a very adventurous eater, so I will try anything once. That's my motto, which is very, very helpful because, you know, of course, when you travel that way, the food is so different everywhere you go. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you just have to say like a prayer and like go for it and hope for the best. But so far, it's been wonderful. And I've been okay. I've tried all kinds of things. And there's just nothing that brings people together as much as sitting together around the table sharing a meal, right? It's just another one of those shared humanity experiences. Let me tell you one more story just from this summer. So I don't know if you followed this in the news, but there was a point where it looked like India might go to war with Pakistan. And so guess where I was at that time? I was in India when this happened. Yeah. And so I had this like existential moment. Thankfully, I was on the campus of one of our long-term partners. And it's, you know, they have a whole campus. They have people that live and work on the campus. They have a school. So I thought, hey, if anything happens and I am stuck here for the next 2 to 3 months, as I'm sure a lot of people were during COVID, I'm okay. This is good. I could live here, you know, for 2 to 3 months. But I remember just like having this existential moment thinking, okay, is this the end for me? Is this the end for me? Is this how it's going to be? Because the atmosphere, there was a lot of fear. The local news was saying India is going to go to Pakistan. It's the first time since the 70s. There was just a lot hanging in the balance. Flights were being canceled. All my flights had been canceled out of the Delhi airport. And I thought, you know what, God? I am so grateful for my life. And if this is how I go out, I'm okay. I'm okay. Obviously, I want to live a long and healthy life and be here to take care of my children.
Sure.
But if this is going to be it for me, I'm okay with it. And so then I got back and, you know, obviously look back now and think, okay, maybe I was a tad dramatic, but for like a few moments there, it felt like that might be it for me.
I think most people would have felt that way. You know, I think talk about common human experiences. I feel like anybody in that circumstance would have felt the tension in the air and prayed that prayer, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah. One of the other cool projects that I know that the foundation has helped fund is the convening that happened amongst all your ministry partners. And I would love if you could maybe speak to that. What was the purpose of that meeting and how was that experience to bring all these ministry partners from all around the world into the same place?
It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic in both expected and unexpected ways. One of the things I said at the beginning that we've been around for 34 years, right? And so we've always sort of been in these deep relationships with all these different groups and teams everywhere, but they've not always necessarily been in relationship with each other, right? And so one of the things that we've seen as an opportunity over the last few years is to build this network of community. They're in different places, but a lot of times they're experiencing, you know, similar challenges, poverty, lack of resources, all of that. How do we bring them together so that they can learn from each other? And so we've started to do that in different ways. And this gathering was one of those opportunities to do that. And we
intentionally did it in Thailand because we have a ministry team there that's been really, really effective in their ministry, particularly when it comes to building it to be locally sustained over the long term. They have a lot of projects happening. They have a factory, they have a K-12 school, they have a seminary. So it's this beautiful, expansive space in rural Thailand, and just bringing people there was itself inspiring. But, you know, remember that our teams are rural church leaders. A lot of them had never left the country. A lot of them didn't even have a passport. So this was a life-changing opportunity for them. Can you imagine coming from rural Kenya and then having to go to Thailand? Everything is new, from navigating the airport to getting a visa to the food and all of that. And it just opened up their minds and their worldview and inspired them. And, you know, everyone's still talking about it. I believe this was last October when that happened. And we know we have to do it again. I sort of had this idea that it's good for us to be in fellowship, it's good for us to gather. But I would say that even I underestimated the impact that it would have on the leaders. They felt so valued, so poured into, so honored. And now it's just totally expanding what their vision for their own teams and their community could be. So it was absolutely fantastic. I'm so, so glad we were able to do that.
Yeah, I can imagine what a great experience it was for these organizations. Like you said, all these new experiences, but also very inspirational to learn from each other, to brainstorm different solutions and things of that nature. I'm glad it was able to take place, and I know that your partners are better off for it.
100%. I wanted to also talk a little bit about, you know, challenges. We talked about challenges in this work. And I always love to talk about this because it just kind of shows you that we have all the best intentions and, you know, we have our vision and our programs and things we want to accomplish. But every so often we are reminded that everything that we're doing sits within this broader social, economic, political context that we have no control over. And that's one of the biggest challenges that comes with being this small grassroots movement, right? I'll give you an example. One of the countries where we work is South Sudan. And the country of South Sudan has been in some state of civil war, political unrest for as long as we can remember. And so we had this great idea that we were going to do a bakery project that would give jobs to women in the community, and then they would sell bread, and then they would make income for the nonprofit and all of that. And it was so great when we planned it out with the team and all of that. But right when we launched it, so we, you know, the women were taught how to bake and all of that. And then we said, okay, we're going to go out and bake bread and, you know, sell bread and so on. And then right when we launched it, you know, a new sort of like conflict started. And then 6 months later, most of the people, you know, had not been paid at their work or not earning wages. And so the whole thing essentially fell apart as it was originally conceived. However, the beautiful thing that came out of that is that the women that had been trained formed a fellowship group. And so they continued to meet with each other and they continued to encourage each other. And now they knew how to bake. So they couldn't sell what they were baking, but they were able to bake bread for their family and their kids, right? And so I love to talk about this project because it was a challenge. It didn't go exactly as we planned. But one of the things I love about ministry or really doing things in the name of Jesus is that God uses everything.
Everything.
Well, he uses everything for good. And so I would have liked to have a successful bakery in a financial sense. We didn't have that. But this project is such a blessing to those women and that community. You know, that's just one of the examples. And of course, the ongoing challenge always is just the cultural, you know, the cultural differences. Communication, you're working with people who have maybe a direct communication style versus an indirect communication style. So there's a lot of opportunities for growth in that. And that's why I speak so much about building a reservoir of trust,
because we need to tap into that reservoir so often when we come against, you know, issues and challenges. One example I can give that just is, you know, it's so glaring is this idea of asking questions. So our role is to basically raise money for the work that's happening on the ground, tell the stories, really to mobilize, right, the U.S. community for the sake of this work that's happening overseas. But also our role in that is to provide accountability, making sure that projects are happening and making sure that, you know, things are going as we had agreed. And so, of course, that means that we ask a lot of questions. We ask a lot of questions. And so in the U.S. culture, you and I know that if you're in a meeting, or if you're in a conversation and someone asks a lot of questions, it is a sign of I'm very interested. It's a sign of like, I care so much about what you're doing. I want to learn more. So you see it as a good thing, as a compliment, if someone asks you a lot of questions.
Right.
Now, in Kenya, if I share a project or something that I want to do with you, and then you ask a lot of questions, it can be perceived as you don't trust me. You're asking a lot of questions because you don't trust me. You don't believe what I'm saying. You don't believe, you know, the budget or the project. And so we've learned that over time, you know, after being confused and thinking, you know, the program team is thinking, well, I keep asking all these questions, but it seems like they're getting offended. I don't know why. Meanwhile, it's his job to ask the questions because he's the program manager. And so we've navigated challenges like that by sort of framing it from the outset. And I think one of the things that I enjoy being sort of a third culture person is I get to be this cultural translator, right? Because I'm from East Africa. I am a lot more relatable to the teams. And I've also lived in the US for a while. I'm still figuring out American culture, don't get me wrong. But I'd like to think that I'm doing an okay job in learning and understanding those kind of cultural nuances. So I get to come in to the team and frame it for them and say, hey, it's good when people ask questions, right? When people ask questions, it means that they are interested. If I bring donors to visit the project, they're going to ask you lots of questions, and it's because they care. It's because they want to learn more. It's because they're invested. I said, what you should be afraid of is if nobody asks questions. But we have hundreds, thousands of cultural kind of moments like this where we get to educate each other and learn from each other.
I think that's so fascinating. And to learn those lessons, and like you said, to be able to be that cultural interpreter, to just enhance the work. I mean, I think you are an example of somebody who's uniquely suited to do this work. I mean, we all are given different blessings and talents by God, and I think you're in the right place for this role at this moment. So
thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
I want to end on this question. So you mentioned that Mission One has been around for 34 years. I'd love to just hear, you know, where has Mission One been and where are you going next? I mean, I'm sure there's been a lot that's been accomplished, but what's on the horizon for Mission One?
Absolutely. It's actually so exciting to be in leadership, really stewarding this great legacy that predates me. I always say to our founder that I have so much respect for him and his contribution because I've not done anything for 34 years.
For that long. My oldest child is 8, right? I've been married, 10 years? That's my longest commitment. So I just have so much respect for the history that's there. And I just also bring that to the leadership and the vision for the future. So over the last 34 years, Mission One has had the opportunity to participate in planting over 8,000 churches where there were none, right? We've seen over 350,000 people become followers of Jesus and find hope in the gospel. We have done numerous projects that serve communities in different ways. And I love all of that, and I am in reverence of all of that. And so I want to make sure that whatever we are doing in the future is not taking away from that. But we also have 34 years of information, 34 years of doing things well, 34 years of failing in some things and learning. And so one of the core values that we have in this season is learning. We want to make sure that we are constantly learning from who we were and what we've done and doing things better. Plus, we want to harness all of the technology and the opportunities we have to do more. We can do so much more with less, right? Because we can communicate more effectively now. It used to be that they would write letters. When Bob started Mission One, they would write a letter and it would take 3 months and then they'll get a response. And so even the quality and depth of the relationships that were possible was just different. Now we can talk every day, you know? Right, so we do, right. Yeah. We can talk every day. We can talk every week. We can travel more frequently. I can decide to go to Kenya right now and probably be on a flight tonight or tomorrow morning. That wasn't the case. And so we want to make sure that we lean into that and we continue to grow the work. The DNA is still the same, coming alongside locally led churches and missionary teams to help them live out their vision for community transformation. Along with that, how do we help them to become locally sustained over time? And that's a very big emphasis for us in this season as well.
I love to hear that. I'm so grateful for all that Mission One does. I'm grateful that the foundation plays our role, but that you all get to come alongside these mission partners and really be the hands and feet of Jesus. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you so much, James. Of course, you know that none of this would be possible without you. So we are so grateful for the relationship with the Pulte Foundation, more so that it's kind of going back several years now. So it's so life-giving and encouraging to us to know that what we're doing resonates, that you continue to see value in it, and that you continue to want to be on this journey with us. So thank you.
No, absolutely. If our listeners have been inspired by our conversation and they want to find out more about Mission One, where should I send them? Where should they go to learn more to become a supporter?
The first place is our website, missionone.org. So it's the word mission, the number one.org. And then from there, you can read about all of the stories that I'm sharing and, you know, learn more. We're also very active on social media. So Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, all of it. It's just at Partner with Mission One. And that's also the handle for our YouTube channel where you can watch videos that tell you more about the stories that I've just shared here today.
And for all of you listening, I have to say they have some of the best media. They have the best stories and the best photographs and videos. It's really, really stuff that really touches your heart. So I hope you go out and take a look.
Thank you so much.
Olivia, I'm so grateful that you were able to take the time to talk with me today. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Absolutely.
And thank you all for tuning in at home to this episode of Inspired by Their Stories. We hope you enjoyed that conversation with Olivia. Her insights into the international work that Mission One does and the common threads that connect us all remind us that humanity truly transcends borders. Join us next month as we welcome guests from Building Homes for Heroes and Operation Homefront. They will share about the incredible work they do in providing homes for our veterans through the Built to Honor program. You won't want to miss their inspiring stories. That's a wrap on this episode of Inspired by Their Stories from the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation. If you're feeling inspired, please share this episode with a friend. Until next time, be good to each other and inspire others to do the same.